Tonight, the president lashes out at the author of that new and critical book while defending his own mental stability and makes new comments about the Russia investigation, North Korea, and immigration. Tens of millions suffer more record-breaking cold. Is a warming trend finally on the way? Planes collide, a fireball erupts, and what some passengers did that could have made things worse. The new restrictions that could mean a higher tax bill for millions, prompting some local governments to find creative ways to help taxpayers. A big jewel heist, thieves stealing millions in diamonds and gold in the middle of the day. And how these students are using America's past to become its newest citizens.
This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. The president had a lot to say on this Saturday. After a series of tweets defending his mental abilities early this morning, Mr. Trump turned a brief appearance at Camp David into an impromptu exchange with a small group of reporters. He took on that scathing new book about his administration, calling the author a fraud. The weekend retreat with top Republican leaders meant to hash out their agenda for 2018. We begin with Kelly O'Donnell at the White House.
Inside a chilly hangar at Camp David, flanked by top Republican lawmakers and administration officials, the president defended his own fitness for office.
He's a very excellent student, came out, made billions and billions of dollars, became one of the top business people, went to television, and for 10 years was a tremendous success, as you probably have heard.
Deeper than bravado, the president had already used Twitter this morning to address his own psychological well-being. My two greatest assets have been mental stability and being, like, really smart, and described himself as a very stable genius at that. This Trump-style introspection is driven by White House outrage over a new book by Michael Wolff that claims the president's inner circle questions his capacity to do the job.
This guy that doesn't know me at all, by the way, did not interview me for three. He said he interviewed me for 3 hours in the White House. It didn't exist.
The president's anger extended to fired former chief strategist Steve Bannon, who cooperated with the author.
And I guess Sloppy Steve brought him into the White House quite a bit, and it was one of those things. That's why Sloppy Steve is now looking for a job.
The president, who threatened legal action to try to stop publication, complained about the system.
I consider it a work of fiction, and I think it's a disgrace that somebody's able to have something, do something like that. The libel laws are very weak in this country.
This weekend's Camp David meetings and working dinner did not include the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. Today, the president was asked if he had directed his top White House lawyer to discourage Sessions from recusing himself in the Russia investigation back in March.
Everything that I've done is 100% proper.
The time spent at Camp David was intended to set priorities for Republicans in the coming year, both on policy and in politics with the coming midterm elections. On immigration, the president says he wants to make a deal with Democrats in a bipartisan way, linking billions of dollars requested for a border wall and security to the possibility of extending legal protection for young immigrants known as Dreamers. That's at least his starting point. Kate?
Kelly O'Donnell, thank you. By the way, Michael Wolff, the author, will be on Meet the Press tomorrow. Tens of millions of people are suffering through another weekend of bitter cold, with temperatures in single digits or colder in the eastern part of the country. And the dangerous weather has already claimed more than two dozen lives since the new year. Morgan Radford is following all of that and has our report.
The storm may be gone, but round two just arrived.
It's never been this cold this long.
We're ready for spring. I am, for sure.
Near Boston, cars encased in ice and firefighters battling flames with frozen hydrants. And tonight, half the country is facing below freezing temperatures. Frostbite can happen in just 30 minutes when the wind chill is 20 below zero. And hypothermia is always a risk in cold weather. Signs include intense shivering, slurred speech, and sudden confusion. In Mount Washington, New Hampshire, wind gusts of 101 miles per hour. That feels like 94 degrees below zero, enough to make your eyelashes freeze. And popular ski resorts like Killington in Vermont closed due to safety concerns. In Connecticut, oil workers braving the elements to make sure others stay heated in the frigid snap.
The fuel pumps are all gelled up and stuff, so it takes a while to get on the road.
And in New York, a frozen Hudson River. and delayed passengers.
There's people everywhere and zero information.
This week's storm causing a backlog of flights at major airports like JFK.
So I'm trying to get to Los Angeles to cover the Golden Globes on NBC Sunday. The problem is my flight out of JFK canceled. It's still a mess because of Thursday storm. So I'm driving to Philadelphia, flying to LA out of there.
Millions fighting the frost, still not out of the danger zone just yet.
I have leggings, jeans, and snow pants. I feel like the Michelin man.
Temperatures are expected to remain below freezing through the weekend, turning fountains like this into entire blocks of ice. And as for those travelers, more than 3,500 flights delayed or canceled today alone. But we are happy to report that our very own Al Roker is going to make it to his destination of Los Angeles in time for tomorrow's Golden Globes. Kate?
Well, that's a relief at least, Morgan. Thank you. We all need a break. The good news is it looks like we may be about to turn the corner on this dangerous cold wave. Let's bring in meteorologist Dylan Dreyer for that. Dylan?
Good evening, Kate. The coldest air is still moving into the Northeast as temperatures tumble. We are looking for morning lows Sunday morning at 10 below the wind chill in Cleveland, 10 below also in New York City, Norfolk, Virginia. It'll feel like 1 degree up in Bangor, Maine. It'll feel like 28 degrees below zero. Record low temperatures are likely in Philadelphia. The old record four, we're forecasting zero. New York, one. Up across New England, the old record was 10 below. We should get to 12 below in Portland and Boston. 5 below is the expected low compared to the record of 2 below. Warm air is waiting in the wings. It's going to move into the Midwest on Sunday afternoon. It will start to spread east by Monday. Atlanta makes it up to 60 by Tuesday. Kate?
Dylan, thanks. There was panic in Toronto last night after two jets collided on the runway and one of them caught fire. No passengers were injured, but the evacuation was slowed down because some wanted to take their carry-on bags with them. Tom Costello reports on how it happened and why it could have been much worse.
Fire on the wing and terror on board a WestJet passenger plane just arriving in Toronto from Cancun.
There's people running around, an aircraft on fire.
It happened as an empty plane being towed somehow backed into the WestJet plane as it approached the gate.
All of a sudden, it started venting fuel all over the wing. And then in about a second or two later, it was like a big fireball. And then everyone started yelling and like panicking.
Oh! After first remaining seated, passengers quickly jumped down the slides.
Going Alpha Kilo, they are evacuating.
But witnesses said some passengers grabbed their carry-on bags, a potentially deadly mistake.
You can potentially be putting a half or a quarter of the aircraft in jeopardy of burning up on that plane just because you have stopped to get your bag.
It's happened before. Passengers grabbed their carry-ons when Asiana 214 crashed in San Francisco, when a British Airways plane caught fire in Las Vegas, and when an American plane caught fire in Chicago. Today, planes are stuffed with carry-ons as passengers try to avoid paying to check bags.
The briefcase, the books, clothes, none of that is important.
The advice from crash survival experts, obey flight attendants, kick off high heels, leave behind all coats and carry-ons, and get off fast. A matter of life or death. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
As you've undoubtedly heard, the new year brought big changes in the tax law, and one of the biggest for individual taxpayers is the new limit on deducting state and local taxes from your federal tax return. But in these first days of 2018, some cities and towns are already looking for new and creative loopholes to help cushion the impact. Steve Patterson takes a look.
The Trump administration's signature victory in 2017.
Oh, congratulations.
Is potentially sparking what could be its biggest fight of 2018.
The ink is just starting to dry on the tax bill. A lot of states are trying to figure out how it's going to affect their residents.
At the heart of the fight, limits on deductions for state and local taxes. Experts say people in these high-tax areas could be on the hook to pay more. As many in traditional blue states, average deductions of over $15,000 every year in city and state taxes. It all used to be deductible from a federal tax bill. Next year, the deduction is capped at just $10,000. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says he'll sue.
And we will challenge it in court as unconstitutional.
But other leaders are getting more creative to reduce what they've called a politically motivated tax grab. The new law maintains deductions for charitable donations, so they're concocting ways to allow people to donate money to state and city coffers and get back a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for their contribution.
Republicans are saying Democrats always wanted richer people to pay higher taxes. That's exactly what this is doing. And Democrats are saying, hold on, this was really unfairly targeted at high tax states, which happen to be the Democratic states. And so this feels more like a political targeting than tax policy.
If the proposals become law, it's unclear how the Trump administration would respond. The IRS would have the right to weigh in and could say the unusual donations don't qualify for tax relief. Steve Patterson, NBC News, Los Angeles.
Well, for one lucky person in Florida, financial concerns are now a thing of the past. He or she became the sole winner of the Mega Millions lottery jackpot last night. Maya Rodriguez made her way to the place where the ticket was purchased.
It's $450 million.
A mega win in Florida tonight, with one lucky winner grabbing the top Mega Millions prize, $450 million.
I come here all the time. It wasn't me, though. Unfortunately.
The golden ticket bought at this 7-Eleven in Port Richey, Florida, north of Tampa, where business was brisk today.
Today is my 18th birthday. I can get my first legal ticket.
By Florida law, the winner cannot remain anonymous. But lotto officials offer one immediate bit of advice before you cash in.
Don't tell anyone. If they find out about it, they might try to scam you. They might try to even maybe burglarize you.
Americans' love of the lottery translates into big bucks. The average American spends more than $206 a year on lotto tickets. In Florida, the average is higher, more than $256. So who spends the most? Massachusetts, with the average resident there shelling out more than $734 a year. Tonight, an even bigger jackpot up for grabs, the Powerball drawing, with more than $500 million. The odds of winning? 1 in 292 million. You have a better chance of being struck by lightning, but that won't stop many from trying their luck.
This is the state of Florida. Lightning can strike twice anywhere.
As for the Mega Millions, Florida lotto officials say the earliest they'll be able to certify the winning ticket is Monday. So the winner is going to have to hold on to it until then. Kate.
All right, Maya, thank you. In Italy, a story of millions lost. Jewels on display at a famous palace in Venice are still missing tonight after a pair of thieves broke into a glass case and walked away with them through a crowd of tourists. Authorities say it was clear they knew what they were doing. The heist was recorded on surveillance video, and Matt Bradley has those details.
It had all the makings of a Hollywood heist film.
We got 4 minutes to load and leave. Let's go.
Without any of the adrenaline or sophistication. But with this week's real-life version of the Italian job lacked in style, it made up for in audacity. In a daytime robbery on Wednesday at the popular tourist attraction, the Doge Palace Museum in Venice, on the last day of a worldwide exhibition tour, two thieves made off with an estimated millions of dollars in Indian jewels, diamond earrings, and a diamond pendant owned by the royal family of Qatar. They made it look easy. No car chases or cracked safes. One burglar on lookout tries to appear inconspicuous as another pilfers the jewels from a display case. They escaped by mixing in with the visitors, said Italian police. When the alarm went off, the police launched a wide-ranging investigation and manhunt to track down those responsible. Investigators suspect the burglars had help. They were somehow able to delay the alarm, which didn't go off until they were already making their escape. A brazen burglary, giving Hollywood a run for its money. Matt Bradley, NBC News.
Jerry Van Dyke has died. The younger brother of Dick Van Dyke was an actor and comedian in his own right, appearing on The Dick Van Dyke Show and in many other television and film roles. He was perhaps best known for playing Luther Van Damme on the comedy series Coach. for which he was nominated for an Emmy 4 times. Jerry Van Dyke was 86 years old. And a trailblazer in space has died as well. John Young flew to the moon twice, walked on its surface, and commanded the first space shuttle mission. He flew into space 6 times and was the only one to do so as part of the Gemini, Apollo, and space shuttle programs. Former President George H.W. Bush said Young represented the best in the American spirit, always looking forward, always reaching higher. John Young was 87. Still ahead tonight, becoming an American, how a museum draws on links to the past to help immigrants pass the test for citizenship. Also, team spirit, Cleveland style. It was a party, but also a protest for the NFL team that went 0-16. The number of people applying to become citizens of this country has jumped in the last year or so. It requires a 20-page application and knowledge of 100 questions on a test. With that in mind, some are taking advantage of a unique program that helps them prepare for the test by stepping back in time. Rahima Ellis explains.
This may look like a typical museum tour, but it's so much more than that.
So that's when that movement starts.
The guide is also a teacher, and the visitors are immigrants and students learning American history through art, preparing for the citizenship exam.
This is the first president of the United States.
Students like Japanese-born Hiroko McVeigh have been in America for years, but with growing restrictions on legal immigration, she's worried.
It's a little uncertain what's going to happen for the green card holder like myself.
And she says the museum is helping her to do more than just memorize answers for the test.
I want to understand the history, not just the bits and pieces of what, you know, it's considered important to know.
That's exactly what Samantha Rikers was hoping for when she designed the course for the New York Historical Society.
You need an odd number so someone can make a decision.
Combining classwork with gallery tours, this free 6-week course is the first of its kind at a museum, bringing the nation's history alive, including the founding of the country, women's suffrage, civil rights.
One of the questions on the test is, why did people move to America? Why did people first immigrate to this country? And they can see that here. It's freedom of religion.
Mario Barrientos came to the United States from Mexico looking for the American dream. Married and with a child on the way, Barrientos says he took the course to make sure immigration concerns won't affect his growing family.
I feel American right now.
With the museum's help, he passed the exam and now is an American citizen.
This is one goal when I'm starting the museum for the technical class and say that this is my goal.
Using the art of history to understand America and become a part of it. Rahima Ellis, NBC News, New York.
Want to check out if you have what it takes to become a U.S. citizen? You can head to the Nightly News Facebook page. Up next, the sledding sensation you will not want to miss. It would be impressive enough if Secret, the Australian Shepherd, just slid down the hill in Sioux City, Iowa, on her sled. The balance, the agility, remarkable, right? But Secret goes a step further. She actually pulls her sled up the hill, eager for the next ride down. Her owner said she probably did this 50 times that day. That video has been watched tens of millions of times. And in Cleveland today, they held a parade of sorts for their football team. You probably know the Browns didn't win a single game this season, so several thousand fans paraded around the team's stadium in what was dubbed a no-victory lap. Much of their frustration was aimed at the team's owners, but it was directed at the players and coaches as well. Over the last 2 seasons, the Browns have won just a single game. When we come back, a far different story for a promising young player who's at the top of his game. Finally tonight, an update on a story we first brought you in 2016. It's about a teenage football player in Washington State who overcame tough odds to climb to the top of his game today. Ann Thompson has his remarkable comeback story.
At today's U.S. Army All-American Bowl, wide receiver Roderick Fisher, number 88, ran into what appears to be a very bright future.
Go, Roderick! Woo!
A remarkable comeback story of football, family, and love.
It's just an exciting feeling compared to just kind of being like around and just, I don't know, surviving instead of living.
He is a high school graduate.
This diploma is as hard-earned as any that I've seen.
You see, when Roderick was just 15, he left home and school and football for a year. Homeless and directionless, Roderick went back to school in Spokane, Washington, and broke down in his football coach's office.
He goes, Coach, I have nowhere to go. I have nobody, and I need help.
Dear Father, thank you for...
We first met Roderick in 2016 after Coach Adam Fisher and his wife Jolene took him in, giving Roderick support, structure, and two new sisters, Allie and Sydney.
Which is tougher, Roderick, life or football?
Life, definitely.
Then a year ago, adopting Roderick.
We will love you today, tomorrow, and for eternity.
Now, Roderick has a scholarship to play at Washington State and opportunities like this to compete against some of the best high school football players in the country.
If I'm doing that extra rep and it hurts and I'm like, you know, I can't do this, and it reminds me the pain isn't any worse than what I've been through before.
In the stands, his family. Adam retiring from coaching so he can watch Roderick in college.
The support just doesn't end when he leaves the house and when he goes to college. This is a lifelong journey.
It's a good life, yeah.
On and off the field. Ann Thompson, NBC News.
By the way, Roderick's team won. The West beat the East 17-16. Good for him. That is nightly news on a Saturday night. Tomorrow, America's best hopes on ice. Which figure skaters will represent Team USA at the Olympics next month? We'll have the results for you. I'm Kate Snow. For all of us here at NBC News, have a great night.
Watch NBC News than any other news organization in the world.